Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna.
How are you?
I'm invigorated and full of life after the conversation we just had.
That's good. We are here for another episode of Ethnically Ambiguous, and we have a great guest, Shireen.
Yeah, Lloyd put us in touch with her, a friend of the pod, a friend of the world, Lloyd. But Kiana Jay is joining us today. She's a incredibly talented musician. She's a multidisciplinary artist working in so many different fields. She's indigenous, she's black, she's fucking beautiful inside out. And we have an amazing conversation about her work and her art. And she just put out her debut EP, Psychowave, under the name Two Lips. It's so, so good.
So good. So good.
So good. And we talk all about it, so stay tuned.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's good. We had some technical difficulties, but I'm really happy to be recording with our guest today. But yeah, it's December. It's December. December already.
December, as we call it. December.
December. But it's December already, which really weirds me out. Time isn't real. I don't understand it. I am in the process of moving, which is also very stressful for me because I've been in this building for almost 8 years.
Wait, are you leaving the building? I forget to ask.
I am leaving the building.
You're going to that one place we discussed?
I am going to that one place we discussed.
Oh, guys, these recordings are going to get so much more interesting moving forward.
Okay, that's all we're going to say about that. For reasons I can't discuss legally. I'm kidding. No. But I've just been in this building the entire time I've been in LA. Yeah. I've moved from a studio to a two-bedroom within the same building, but I've been here for almost 8 years. It's a huge chunk of my 20s, a huge chunk of my life, and because of that, I have way too many things for one person. Right, and I'm going into a very small space, and I'm very stressed about it.
Did you get rid of that mattress?
No, someone's supposed to be picking it up today.
Okay.
I hope. I had a whole mattress fiasco last week.
Yeah, sometimes I forget what we've spoken about on air and what we haven't.
Yeah, that was off air. That was a FaceTime call. But it felt like on air because I was FaceTiming you and we might as well have recorded it. I don't know.
I know. Second question. You looked at the other apartment in your building and didn't care for it?
Yeah, I didn't care for it. I mean, it was good. It had a walk-in closet. I'm a sucker for a walk-in closet.
Aren't
especially
we all,
with a studio space. But, okay, this is going to sound very hocus pocusy, but that's not the phrase I'm searching for.
It's haunted?
But I think, no. I think the universe was like trying to test me a little bit by showing me that studio because...
Mm. How so?
If I said yes, I was going to move into that studio in the building, I would have lived on every floor of this building.
Oh.
Like, there's only 4 floors, but still. But I think I need to grow, and if to grow, I need to leave this building. Even though I really like it here, I think it's time for a change.
Mm.
And it didn't help that the studio was really gross when I walked in. Like, it had still not been cleaned. It smelled really bad. There's, like, only one tiny window. It felt like a kind of, like, a just, like, a sliver of a, I don't know, like, it felt very prison-like. It's, like, surrounded on all sides by neighbors. And I'm trying to go with my gut and trust myself. I think moving really terrifies me, and I want to face that fear. And I know it's like a very cheesy, weird, like superstitious-y thing, but like, even though it really terrifies me because I have way too many things, I need to figure out how to move into a much smaller space. I need to purge a lot of stuff, and maybe it'll be good for me. Maybe it'll be bad for me. Maybe I'll come back in February or January being like, I've made a huge mistake. We'll have to stay tuned and find out.
That's excited. I'm excited for you.
Yeah,
I'm excited to hear what happens.
Maybe I'll get into some details in a solo episode that we do together. Maybe like another Q&A or something. But I think I'm hopeful that this new place if I figure out how to get rid of enough stuff and have and make room, I would love to get a little cat. I would love to get a shelter cat, like an adult cat, because no one takes the adult ones, and I really want to get a cat. And I've always wanted a cat. I just never felt capable of taking care of a living thing.
This cat? But,
just kidding, yeah, dog.
Yeah, Anna's showing Ace to the screen, by the
way. My cat's here too, but he's not in the room. I had to put him out because he kept meowing.
I figured.
He got kicked out of the studio.
But I feel rude to have our guest on hold this whole time as we're talking. Yeah, so our mutual friend, Lloyd, who has also been on this podcast, who shot our Subvert cover, or like a feature, cover. Who are we? He shot a feature of us for Subvert back in the day. That's how we met. And he put us in touch with Kiana. He recommended that you reach out to us, Kiana. And she did. And we listened to her music, and it's phenomenal. And I'm just so excited to talk to you today because I already trusted Lloyd's taste, you know? Like, I really... Yes. He's one of my great... Like, I just trust his taste explicitly.
Explicitly?
Sure. I mentioned this before we started recording. This is the first time I've spoken out loud today. But I already trusted him as far as, like, he was like, she's amazing, she would be perfect for the show. And I realized later that he shot your EP cover, which is phenomenal. But yeah, without further ado, this is Kiana J.
Yeah.
Hi, thank you guys. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you for being patient with that very long intro. It's usually like 2 minutes.
My mom came in my room, and then I was trying to like be like, she's introing our guest. You gotta go, Mom.
Mom? Congratulations, though, on your upcoming changes.
Oh, thank you. I'm very scared, and I will be okay, though. Moving really stresses me out. I just have not been able to sleep. Just, like, being in my bed, like, looking around, being like, goodbye. Mm. Like, I won't be looking at you anymore. Like, I live on the fourth floor, but I'm next to this very beautiful tree, and I love this tree. And I always, it's like, right, my bedroom window is completely taken up by this tree. And I'm getting very sentimental saying goodbye to this tree, to be honest. looking at it before I go to sleep, looking at it as I wake up, being like, a couple more weeks now, and then we have to say goodbye, you know?
Yeah, savor those moments.
Yeah. But anyways, this is not about me or my tree. It's not my tree. Kiana,
yeah.
We're recording this on December 4th, and today is the day that your EP actually came out.
Yeah, that's right. Psycho Wave just came out today, December 4th, on Bandcamp.
That's amazing. I want to talk all about your music and your EP, and I want to talk to you about my favorite songs on the EP. It's so, so good. But before that, I want to rewind a little bit, and I want to get some background about you. I want to get to know you. I did do some stalking. I read about you on your website. I did some other stalking on Subvert. But let's hear from the source. Who are you? Like, where did you grow up? How would you describe yourself?
Sure. I grew up in northern New Mexico, in Tizuque, just north of Santa Fe. And my mom is indigenous, half Athabascan from Alaska, half Sioux. And my dad is Black and was raised by a single mom. She is a social worker for Natives with disabilities. And just grew up very tribally and spiritually, close to the desert and close to the elements, the naked land. And now I live in Los Angeles. I have been here since 2015, May. Let's see what else. I went to University of New Mexico and studied speech and hearing sciences, sociology, and dance. And I couldn't make up my mind about it, but sort of half-assed even went through university because I knew that I was going to pursue a career here in Los Angeles. And my last 2 years of college, I got picked up by a modeling agency and got to move to LA through that. And then I got dropped a year after being here. Mm-hmm. And it was really devastating and made more room just for the other art forms that there are that I've been practicing. So now I'm just in the habit of saying yes and accepting that my story is being asked. And also as an actor, I'm being asked to tell different stories right now. And I'm curious what you guys think, because I feel like we're living in a bit of a renaissance right now.
Yeah. As far as like art and creation goes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would
the art, that. Yeah, the music that's being made, the podcasts that are being made. I'm just really happy to be part of the conversations.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, like, it's also kind of an amazing time where you can almost, for the most part, do it all. Like, you can, like, it's so easy to have a podcast now because you can literally teach yourself the tech and then also just get the equipment. Or just literally team up with someone and they can help you. And it's, I was, you know, looking at your website and you had so many different like disciplines that I was like, wow, she really does it all. But it's like such a, I don't know. I agree. It is definitely a renaissance time of like, if you want to be you in LA, especially because there's so many creative avenues and so many people who are collaborating, like you really can experiment and or like try out many different artistic realms, if you will.
Mm-hmm. And I also think the caliber is different, mm-hmm. because even with a podcast or with a song, you better have a song to make.
Yeah.
You better have a podcast to make, because when I saw at the beginning of COVID that all the podcast mics sold out, I don't want to hear most people's podcasts, especially people that are like, you know, just super starting it now. Like, it's an art. It's not just like a place to hear yourself talk. You got to have something important that you're doing.
Yeah. I really like that you described it as a renaissance. I haven't heard it described that way. I haven't really put a name to it, but I have felt that there is like this resurgence of, I don't know, art in all forms. Like, I really love film. I'm a filmmaker. I love poetry and art. And I think I'm nervous about the opposite happening. I'm nervous about being so inundated with content and quotes that like I won't be able to parse through and find the things that give me purpose. But with the tools at our disposal, I mean, there's just been so much good art this year. And I think that's like a silver lining that we have to really cherish, because it's there are only so many this year that we can really cherish. And not even just this year, I think the past 5 years I think has really nurtured this like independent drive for a lot of artists in all disciplines. And I remember being very nervous about being pigeonholed once we started this podcast. I was like, oh, she's a podcaster. It's like, no, I'm a filmmaker, I'm a poet, I have all these things, I'm an artist.
Damn right.
And I think now people are able to accept multifaceted artists versus, I think, a while ago, people would ask, what do you do? Expecting like a one-word answer, you know?
Well, that was because of branding.
That's true.
You know?
That's very true.
Even lately in my philosophy, I decided that I refuse to be branded, because we know where that term comes from.
Yeah. Capitalism is the death of all. Capitalism kills every type of, I don't know,
vibe.
At the same time, though, it's like it's hard not to be to fall prey to capitalism. Like, not, I feel like I've tried to monetize so many of my passions because I've been told that's how you're supposed to live as an artist. When this year, if nothing else, I started writing poetry again for the first time in a while, and it was just for me. And I realized, like, oh, this is why I started when I was a preteen writing poetry. It's a catharsis. It's not about making money all the time. It's about doing things. And I think, like, even Anna, I get really inspired by, like, you're very crafty. Like, you just like working with your hands, and you started making masks at the beginning of all this. And I really think, like, those avenues that we find ourselves, we nurture ourselves first in order to nurture others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so. And I also think that's how we're meant to live. We're meant to be multifaceted beings.
Yeah, I agree. But so when you were growing up in New Mexico, What was your demographics like? You're half Indigenous, half Black. Did you find yourself being put into one box or another? Or did you kind of like, were you always raised with both cultures pretty instilled in you?
My mom being Native, she, as a brown woman, I think super, I felt brown. Mm-hmm. I knew that. And then I also knew that I was the darkest person in any room that I was in for a lot of my formative life, really early, actually through high school and through a long time of college. I didn't really digest that too much until later on, but New Mexico is largely Latino and Indigenous and white. And growing up in Tizuka is mostly Latino natives and then white, definitely not Black. I remember my mom worked at a restaurant and I was maybe five. And then this woman walked in who was tall and Black and super, super statuesque. And I assume we were related.
Oh, yeah.
Because I hadn't seen Black people.
Wow.
And I wanted to talk to her. And that one time my dad came and visited too, a couple of months after that. And there was a flight coming in from California. And it was in the before times, before 9/11, you could go up right up to the gate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there were two Black guys that walked out before him. And I thought both of them were him. I just, you know, was sort of looking in my head for the other puzzle piece because I didn't look like my mom back then, especially as a Native woman with long hair holding this little Black girl's hand. And so I remember when he got off too, I was holding hands with both of them and sort of felt like it made sense finally. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you put one and one together and now it makes three and I get how that happened and that's why I look like this.
Yeah, that's so beautiful to like, I mean, as a child, I think we search for familiarity where we can find it and we don't realize it's almost like limiting as we grow older, having to be an adult, because in a way, like, yeah, that woman that walked in that was statuesque, like, she was probably closer to family than a lot of people that you had met at that point. Like, she probably understood you in a way that...
Real talk.
Yeah. So, and those two men. It's just like, we reach for representation. We reach to be seen. When we see someone that can provide us with that, I think as a child, it's unconscious. We don't even realize we're doing it. So I think it's those memories are really special, I feel like.
I think they're really formative. Even a couple months ago, I did this gathering with a social distance gathering with 30 Black women. And I could see a little bit of myself in everybody, you know, just see like my hair here, my skin over there, my eyebrows over there. And particularly with Black peoples, it feels like such a reuniting because we were all just put together and regardless of language or whatever and shipped here.
Yeah.
Stolen. And so I feel really thankful to be Black in that it's the constant rejoining with my long lost brothers and sisters. And it is us. It is me when I see them.
I had an experience like that in the sense that when you saw this Black woman come in and think we're related, I think I've spoken about this before, when I was in elementary school, I was the only, you know, Persian kid around. No one really knew what I was. And I, you know, I was just trying to fit in. So I wasn't kind of making a point of telling people. There was another girl, another Persian girl moved to the neighborhood and started at my school. This was fifth grade, I think. Yeah, fifth grade. And she looked just like me. Like, it was surreal. I like saw her and I was like, she's Persian. She gets it. I went up. I introduced myself. I was like, hey, you're Persian. I'm Persian. What's up? And like immediately was like, your parents should know my parents. And then it like started where like everyone thought we were related. Like the second I spoke to her, people were like, they're related. They look exactly the same. They're both like little brown girls with curly, long Black hair. It's like, yes, that's whatever. We look like that. But like, it was so quick that a teacher was like, did your cousin just move to town or something? And I was like, no. Like no, yeah. It's just another Persian girl, Mr. White old teacher who has never seen another Persian before in your life.
Do you feel like that put some sort of space between you and her?
Not really. Like, I think at the time I didn't, at the time it was just like silly to me. I was like, yeah, I know we mm-hmm. look alike. We were just young Persian girls, like poofy, curly brown hair to me. I was like, that's what also all my relatives look like too. So it's like, I just, you know, I was like, yeah, they just assume we are related because we look alike. Now looking back, I was like, you know, in retrospect, I've been like, God, that was a really, you know, sad, surreal thing that my neighborhood was just so unaware of, like, what brown people were, that they just assumed if you were one, you were related to the other. I think it actually kind of brought us closer together. We found, like, kinship in our friendship because we were, like, the two Iranian girls and just looked alike, that it was finally like, oh, cool, like, literally, like, representation in each other. Because that's just, like, what we had.
That's so interesting, I guess, because I think of the other black girls that I went to high school with, there's maybe only, like, less than a handful. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of assumed that we would be friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, or that we would, like, have something in common or get along.
Yeah.
But also there's a just weird, there's colorism and other challenges between black women that I think were in play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, that's really, it's tragic because it's like white supremacy at work, where it's like, even in communities of color, we're pitted against each other because there's colorism in, I want to say, like, every culture, really. Like, if not the vast majority of them.
Now?
Yeah.
At least in, like, our contemporary world, yes.
Yeah, 100%. And it's so tragic because we don't even realize it, I think, especially as kids, how much it affects the way we perceive others and the way that we're perceived. So I'm really sorry you had that experience.
Well, I mean, we wouldn't be here really without it. I don't want other people to have to experience it.
That's true.
Of course.
Yeah.
But it's a big part, at least, informing the types of conversations that I'm able to have.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm really grateful that you are having these conversations, not with us, but also, like, you've, from what I have gathered based on my stalking of you, you're very vocal about issues that I think before this year haven't been given the time of day. I think this year a lot of people are like, why aren't we talking about this? And it's like something that Indigenous people or people of color have been talking about forever.
Yeah.
I really appreciate coming into this sentiment because there's nothing worse than being a brown or black person and interacting with maybe a white or, like, a lighter person in this world that is maybe finally has access to the vocabulary mm-hmm. that we've been working so hard to develop mm-hmm. and we've been putting it in our music, in our films, in the stories that we tell. And something really did happen this year. Something really did click.
There was a shift. There was definitely a shift of some sorts.
I mean, I almost argue that's why I feel really comfortable putting out a body of work like Psycho Wave right now, the new EP, because I think maybe people are ready to actually hear it and engage with it and not commodify it, mm-hmm. but really hear it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think at the start of all this, there was an influx of, like, brands or companies being like, we want to have more diversity and, like, we're going to post some, like, three people of color on our page. And then it was, like, back to normal. But I think we have to really keep this momentum going. This conversation should have happened years ago, if not decades. And, like, I'm just really glad we're finally having it. And I'm really glad that you were at the stage to release this EP because it's really fucking good. But we're going to get into it when we come back. Let's take one break. We'll be right back. And we're back. Kiana, let's just talk about the EP. I want to talk about it. I don't want to save it for last. Whatever. So something I really love about this EP is that, like, I couldn't really define it into a genre, which I think is, like, kind of your whole, like, that's who you are. Like, I feel like from what I've gathered, like, you'd refuse to be put into a box. So many of the songs are so unique. Like, Long Way Home has like this jazzy element to it at some point that's like so different from the other songs, which I really loved. And me and Lloyd were both talking about how much we like Vigilante. It's so good. All of these songs are so good. I can hear a very singular voice, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I would say like it's very different, but it's like familiar in a way, if that makes sense. Like when I was listening to it, like there was something like almost comfortable about it, if that makes sense. Like I'm like, yes, this is what I want and need to hear. Like this is just good music that I'm truly like vibing with. While I was listening to it earlier today in just my room and like alone, and it almost felt like, because I'm in my high school bedroom, that I was like, this almost takes me back to just like what I would be doing in high school, just be like sitting and just listening to like, you know, just, I don't know, maybe this is just the genres I'm pulled towards, waves, if you will, because you called it psycho wave, which I kind of want to get into in a little bit, but like there is this, I don't know, the musical aesthetics, if you will, are pleasing to my ears. I think I'm speaking in such weird, vague terms.
Anna's
but I'm
also a
like,
reviewer for Pitchfork. So yeah, her phrases are very technical.
I give this a 10 out of 10. I'm like trying to think of the language I would use to describe the music, but I'm like blanking because I am actually not a music reviewer. It's very pleasing to my ears.
Yeah.
And it sounds like the genre that I am most drawn to.
Yeah.
I can't help but just, you know, I like it a lot. And I'm curious, where did the concept of like psycho wave come from? It feels like there's like this trend where everything's called like wave. And I'm not 100% sure where that comes from because I've heard like vapor wave. I don't fully understand it because I just am not hip to anything other than, you know, crafting in my bedroom. But kind of explain that a little more for my simple mind.
Sure. Well, I had decided on the name Psycho Wave for the EP sometime last year because I was painting. I still do paint a lot of maze imagery.
Okay.
But something about the feeling that it was eliciting in me, you know, it felt very visceral and really satisfying to paint mazes and to look at them and to solve them.
Yeah.
And then I feel like when you said it reminded you almost of being a teenager, I really felt that in making it. It felt that's such a raw time in life. And in some ways we're never really done dealing with it and what we experienced during that time.
Yeah.
And in a lot of ways, this is stuff that I wish I could have said then.
100%. I mean, I say this on the show a lot, but I think as artists, we make things that we needed when we were younger. We become the people that we needed as kids, as teenagers, because those raw years, the repercussions, you feel them for the rest of your life, and they play out in different ways. So yeah, I'm really glad that you feel that way about your music too, because I really think it's true for so many people where we make the things that we needed and we become the people we needed.
Yeah. And even in a song like A Long Way Home, because the EP is mostly rap and tribal kind of be intent driven, right? And that's really where I live. That's the universe that I'm living in right now. But A Long Way Home being jazz and such fusion too, I really wanted it to represent the pain of excellence, particularly being a Black person or Indigenous person or a minority, in the pressure that carries to be excellent in whatever it is that you decide to do to accommodate for your brownness or your Blackness or your otherness. Mm-hmm. I started ballet really young at 2, and I'd taken violin and I did orchestra as well. And really had excellence ingrained into me.
Yeah.
As a way of being.
Yeah, I think Anna and I can both relate to that. I think our parents instilled in us not only like a very intense work ethic, but because you're not only trying to be excellent for your parents or yourself, it's also like your ancestry. And I think it's just like this, a lot of pressure. Yes. But you can turn it into something good as an adult. As a teenager, it's overwhelming, in my opinion. But I think as you grow, you realize that there's a benefit to striving so hard. And it just makes you a stronger person, I think, ultimately.
I think it can. And I also think we're now, as a culture, ready for the conversation of the repercussions of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because that comes with sacrifice, whether it's relationships or health, financial safety,
mm-hmm.
whatever. Like, it's now radical to rest.
It really is, especially this year. It's just
like my ancestors have worked hard enough.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
it is true.
But
you see a lot
in this EP.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, in
this.
Go ahead.
Oh, just in this EP, it was kind of like a last push in processing, and like the last time that I really want to feel hard about it and gritty about it, because I deserve a safer, calmer place to exist.
100%. I think, I hope this year a lot of white people and allies can really understand that the emotional labor shouldn't be on the people that are marginalized. If anything, and it has been for since the dawn of time. Like, it's just the progress is impossible without people of color, without indigenous people, without black people. But when it's only resting on the shoulders of the marginalized, we're not going to get anywhere. Like, we have to, like, emotional labor, I hope this year more people than not understand that. I don't have the most faith in humanity, but I have a little.
In my lyrics of, like, if you set the females on fire, you know, thinking of what's happened and how we've been mm-hmm. sacrificed, our well-being and bodies have just been sacrificed for it in the song Radar. That's part of what that is. Things yeah. reach a breaking point.
Yeah. I needed
your commentary on this. I almost feel like I need to hear you talk about it so I can go back and re-listen to everything again
yeah.
with your thoughts behind in the back of my mind. Like, I see now, I see this. We need more. We should interview more musicians. I am into it.
Listening to music is one thing, but then hearing the artists' motivations behind it is so different. Like, I think, like, I assumed there was tribal influence, but actually hearing, like, yes, like, this is where I live. Like, there's a lot of, like, this is, like, the genre that I'm trying to embody. I also, before we started recording, I mentioned that I was, like, I listened to this as I was trying to do, like, a little bit of a workout, and I just felt really empowered. Like, I think there was such a really beautiful message of female empowerment and female beauty that there was never, like, a lyric, but I felt it, and I just really think that kind of message is just priceless, and I really, really commend you for being able to translate that with so many different kinds of songs.
Thank you. Like, thinking of when Lloyd had encouraged me, because he shot this, you know, and he's like, what are you gonna do, like, promote your album? I was like, I don't know. Like, he's so
supportive. I love him yeah. so much.
He's like, you should talk to these she's over here and look them up. So I did, and as I was, you know, kind of seeing the sort of content that you guys have generated and the conversations that you women are having, I remember thinking to myself, oh, well, this EP is for y'all. Like, this is the collective us mm-hmm. that
yeah.
I really care to be talking to and engaging with and, like, in hearing. And I'm excited to just be engaging in some pollination.
Yeah, I like that word. It's a good word. do you have a favorite song or a song that really, like, hits you a different way when you sing it or when you hear it as far as making it goes?
I lyrically feel most proud of Before Before.
Before Before, that was the first one I listened to.
Cool.
And immediately I was like, oh, whoa, like, this is phenomenal. So I love Before Before.
A collaborator of mine, Harry Foster, produced it. And he played it for me after showing me this poem by Saul Williams, Before Before, and absolutely worth a listen. But I really just kind of took it and distorted it through my own lens. I was the beginning of my engaging with Afro and Indigenous futurism. which inevitably involves a reckoning with the past. Mm-hmm. And if I had one song that probably lyrically most represented what I feel in terms of Indigenous and Black grief, that's probably it.
Yeah, it's a really beautifully powerful song. And it just hits. It just, it's so good.
And it was also like the first song that I didn't feel like I needed to sound pretty, having come from R&B and such soft style.
That's interesting.
It took me a year to write to it. The producer, Harry, gave it to me. And I was like, oh, you think this is me? I don't know.
How did you convince yourself that you didn't have to be, in your words, like pretty? Like, how did you convince yourself to kind of be more raw with your singing style?
I'm almost ashamed to say that the more vulnerable I was, whether that was vocally or subject matter, it was positively reinforced. And I started to understand really quickly that the more vulnerable I was, the more relatable it was going to be. And that the things that I was afraid people would hate about me are the things that they might relate to me the best about.
Mm-hmm. I think so. I think that's what we do end up hating is what we so clearly see in ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, I think that also we just got a note from engineer Zach that Harry is his boy.
Oh,
hey.
He knows Harry. Nice.
Small world. This LA sound and music.
Yeah. All LA sound guys.
Every sound guy in LA knows another. Yeah, they all know each other.
Exactly.
You're right when it comes to vulnerability and rawness, though. I think I've also seen that happen in my own work. Like
There's no art without risk right now. No, get out of here. There's no art without risk.
But I think you're right. The positive reinforcement does go a long way because it's terrifying to put out a body of work that is personal, that is raw. But when people connect to it.
I was so terrified putting this out because I've been sitting on this for maybe a year almost before it's finally ready and afraid of what it means when people know all of these things about me. Now, first of all, I'm like, please listen. But then I'm also like, but what if they listen?
I feel the same way with everything I do. I'm just like, don't watch my films, don't read my poetry, but also like, please do. I'd be nothing without you.
There was a meme I sent Shireen recently, which is like the feeling of being known, yet the feeling of being known, which is like joy and then yet devastation. Yeah. It's like so many levels. Like, it's not just like I'm famous. Like, it's not, and not that we're like famous, but I mean like just like being, and by famous, I mean like literally just like having a lot of followers on Twitter so people are aware of what you're posting, like that devastation, like the joy of being like, I got a lot of likes, that comes with the devastation of everyone knows how I feel now is just it, you know. And a lot of it is like coming from this podcast, like, you know, just because I think a lot of people don't necessarily see podcasts as art, but like doing this show in particular, like I host a lot of dumb shows. Like I host a show about The Bachelor and Below Deck, like just reality TV where like I'm just messing around and making jokes and like recapping television. But then to do a show like this, you know, I really had to make the decision to be as open as possible and talk about things that truly devastated me, like in my culture, just growing up with my family, like things that like still trigger me to this day. And I talk about it very openly, but then afterward I'll be like, oh God, like what have I done? This? I've said too much. I hate everything. You know, you just like shut down a little and be like, I don't want to do it anymore. Like the anxiety and pressure of putting yourself forward and trying to like create a space for other people to feel like they can also express these anxieties and fears and traumas that they've grown up with. I mean, in our case, with immigrant families or people of color families, just like being marginalized or othered or pushed to the side so hard, just feeling like literally, truly culturally insignificant, yet knowing you're significant, like just
insignificant,
all those emotions.
But then also just insignificant. Like your presence in a space when you live in that world is significant.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think something that we can maybe all relate to is we all think these conversations are so important and we want to hear them. And I think we're willing to put ourselves in the center of them for that to happen. I feel like I overshare on every podcast I'm ever on, but every time I do, it always just like, I get the best feedback being like, oh, thank you for normalizing talking about sex or sexuality in this way or whatever, or eating disorders. I want so much to normalize quote unquote uncomfortable conversation. And until this podcast, I don't think I realized how willing I was to start that conversation or even put myself in the center of it. Even if that meant like sharing very honest truths about myself. Mm-hmm. In a way, I feel like your music is a very honest truth about yourself. And
thank you.
I'm sure it's very terrifying, but I'm really glad that you ran to the fear rather than away from it.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate that, especially today on like the day it's coming out and people are seeing with it.
How does that feel? I want to know how that feels too.
It feels very amazing. So much went into it, and I've heard from my collaborators and it's been received well, but also just that I care so much about culture, like almost as a guardian of it, and feel really proud to be adding this to the body of work that just exists out there as part of the human story now to listen to, and really hope that anybody who might benefit from hearing it does. And that now has a chance to happen. And I've kept them so close to me, but it also means now there's room for me to have new thoughts. As important as I believe this work is, you know, we have so many more important conversations to have. And I'm excited. It's like that when you put anything out, you get to move on and reinvent yourself.
Make space for something.
And have a new point of reference too. I feel really excited with that because I don't think I've ever been so bold with my sound or with my lyrical content or with my instrumentation. And now I feel like people can't treat me different. They can't act like before because I'm onto some new stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. Let's take our last break and we'll be right back with more Kiana J. And we're back with Kiana.
I'm on my third mixed drink.
I respect, so much respect. We've touched on this, but you have your hands in so many things. You're a truly multidisciplinary artist in every sense of the word. And I really admire that because I can tell that you put in energy in all these projects that you do. You don't half-ass things. And so what's something that you're working on now that you are excited about for the next year? Tell us about what you're up to.
I'm kicking off the year at an artist residency called Carrizozo Air Artist in Residency in New Mexico under the direction of Paula Wilson, who is another phenomenal multidisciplinary artist. But what I'm most excited about is creating a residency myself. I've participated in a couple fine art residencies the past few years and have realized that I need to take the next step of creating the space myself. I have been transformed by really immersive interdisciplinary artist residencies, but they also don't tend to center Brown or Indigenous art forms. They tend to be catered towards what we call, quote, fine arts or high arts instead of
a very white Western version of what that means. Yeah.
But I just joined the board of directors at Wiseful Circus. It's a nonprofit circus in New Mexico. And that's really changed my relationship just to myself and my physicality. And how many Brown, Black, and Indigenous peoples I think could benefit from a really immersive space. So next September 2021, I'm creating a residency for 30 to 50 Black or Indigenous, or anybody can apply, but it's going to center those art forms, specifically the art forms that are currently going to be represented are visual and installation arts, circus arts, dance and movement, womb healing, ancestral healing, Indigenous plant medicine, film writing, comedy, sustainable living, body positivity, sex positivity, and nutrition, and different sorts of art and like life skill sets that can be applied towards an Afro-Indigenous lens through which to build a future. And those are the kind of like environments that I'm trying to create right now.
Could you explain womb healing a little?
Yeah.
What that is exactly?
Here in the West and in much of the globe, but in the West, whenever there's natural disasters or 9/11, Muslim women experience lower birth weights than the babies did following 9/11. And Black peoples have higher infant mortality, leading to a really strong suggestion that our society and actual environmental racism is having a direct effect on our wombs and our health and our gut health specifically, because the Western diet doesn't typically benefit Brown, Black, or Indigenous body types. That's why we have so much heart disease and diabetes and gut struggles and cholesterol. So with womb healing specifically, I am working with my friend Monica, who's a doula. In New Mexico, she does birth work. And ever since I started to really focus on that part of my life, I felt better decision-making, a better relationship to it, whether it is that we plan to bear children or not. Those of us that are female or female identifying or have, you know, or the womb bearing of us, it has a bigger effect on us than Western medicine likes to let us believe.
Right.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Like, I 100% agree with you, though. Like, it kind of, for me, goes hand in hand with like generational trauma and what it means to carry something, not even realizing it, two generations only because of the trauma that is inflicted on you by an outside world.
Yeah.
But I think it's so vital to attempt to heal that.
There are women that were guardians of this part of life in a lot of Indigenous cultures for a millennia that were burned, that were murdered for daring to have knowledge about how our wombs and how the female system works. And so I think right now we're not only dealing with the repercussions of that, but we also have the opportunity to have a renewed interest in health and a new way of thinking about ourselves.
I mean, you can even say it's also related to the fact that, like, even now with COVID, communities of color are more affected.
Yes.
Why is that? It's because of the same issue. It's because gut health and respiratory health, all of that is just from generations of our bodies trying to cope.
Your body had one job.
It comes out.
You know, it's one job is to keep you alive.
Survival.
And it's been, you know, it's been doing that, but at a point where we can meet the needs of so many people, the human condition does not need to suffer the way that it does. And that's something that, you know, keeps me up at night. Is that we know, like, we know better. Sorry, I'm upset.
No, don't apologize. It's your anger and upsetness is a gift, because you're using it, you're utilizing it to benefit your communities. But until this conversation, I have never heard of the phrase womb healing, but I understand exactly how important it is now.
It's something I have been reflecting on in the past month. I've gotten my feelings really hurt because I saw this installation about Indigenous futurism and got really upset about how in the past that my peoples have been depicted as being is so primitive, such primitive mm-hmm. beings. But then after a couple of days of meditating about it, I've come to a point of gratefulness because I'm not thinking of myself as so separate from the elements and from our non-human relatives, and being allowed to sort of be creature. That's something that I think being a brown person, the ways that we are dehumanized, in some ways it also means that we're not so disconnected from our relatives that are not human and the forces that are not human. So I'm coming to a place of being grateful about that.
Yeah, I understand that. I have many emotions. Well, I mean, it's even more just like intense thoughts when it comes to like how Iran, I mean, just mostly in the last 4 years, how Iranians were treated by the Trump administration and the sanctions. And after Biden was announced the winner, I was like really thinking about it. And I was like, I don't care, because that doesn't change the like emotional trauma I felt these last 4 years. Like the one day I specifically remember was after Soleimani was assassinated, who he was the Iranian general. And there was just all this news about missiles going back and forth and just like war with Iran. And it's like, I'll never get that. Like, I'll never feel good about, like, I'll never get back that time I spent just like fucked up over, like just truly traumatized of like, what's going to happen with my family? What's going to happen with the people of Iran who are being starved, you know?
It's like not just you, it's also your family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was so much emotional trauma that I was thinking like, everyone being like, we've lived through history. And it's like, living through history is so traumatizing. Yeah. Let's not put it that way. I hate the idea of being like, wow, so cool. Well, we'll tell our grandkids about this. It's like, I don't want to have to tell my grandkids about how I lived through all this trauma and how it stayed with me and how I'm like constantly terrified. Like, that's not a cool, good thing for
me. It's a very privileged thing to say. Like, it's so cool. We're living through history. I think
it's not so cool.
I mean, It's just painful. It's very painful. And I have been altered forever with what's been happening with Syria. And because I went through a different version of what Anna's talking about over the course of several years with the war in Syria and being so fearful all the time about my family, just like one by one trying to figure out if they're going to be safe. And still having family there now. And
that's something like it's, as Americans are so removed from, is because our wars are always happening somewhere else.
Yeah, are the brown people that we terrorize and murder, they're not people to America. They're just numbers. They're statistics. If they get to that level, you know what I mean? It's very dehumanizing to feel like you're the only one that gives a shit about people that look like you.
I just want to say, like, on what you were saying, it upset you, like, the depiction of, like, Native American culture and Indigenous culture as being primitive. And, like, there's so many stereotypes of what we see in film and television. Like, I have so much anger over that because of, like, how Middle Easterners or Iranians are seen and, like, the whole concept of, like, terrorism and just, like, someone who... Like, people just see, like, Middle Easterners as, like, angry. Like there's so much...
Right, they see, and them as angry, and they see the women as being completely oppressed.
Yeah. Even the fact that, like, the fucking Muslim ban was an actual thing. Like, even that boggles my mind.
It's like a Muslim is a bad person. Like, my mom is Muslim. My mom is a practicing devout Muslim, and you're telling my... That always just makes me so upset. It's just, like, you're saying my mom is a... bad person.
I mean, my entire family is Muslim, and to try to circle back to the beginning of this conversation, I think when we find someone that can relate to either like being Muslim, being Middle Eastern, or being whatever we are, there's already like a familiarity there. Like, oh, you understand something. Like, it's like a sibling. It's like they grew up in a similar way to you. So they understand by default your experience. And it's impossible for me to see a photo of a Middle Eastern kid on the shore of somewhere without thinking it's like, oh, that's me, that's my cousin, that's my whole family. Mm-hmm. Like, that child is all of us. And I think the same can be said for so many marginalized communities. It's just heartbreaking to try to continue to live with despite having so much trauma, if that makes sense, but then trying to utilize it in a productive way.
I just accept that for my lifetime, I'm going to feel angst because there's deep injustice. And even if in my lifetime it's not affecting people who look like me, I at least know that it's going to be affecting somebody. And so I guess I'm just sort of mentally preparing myself for the fact that that's the mission that I've committed myself to and have agreed to not be numb.
Yeah. I'm really glad because agreeing to not be numb and also utilizing your emotions and your anger to create something.
This summer I had to, because as crazy as dark COVID times, you know what's going on? Whoa. I did a recommitment to life ceremony. It was like a marriage to myself.
I love that.
If anybody wants to do it out there, you ladies, if you want to, I can send you a little package. But, you know, really just like recommitted to myself and recommitted to staying here in the realm and being on the team and advocating for people. And
please send that over. I would love it. And I mean, I'm also 100% going to apply to your residency
It's a residency. Yeah, it's going to be a...
Okay, sorry. I thought you called it
something
different.
It's going to be 2 weeks in the desert. You ready?
Yeah, I'm fucking ready. I live for this shit. I want to be there already. I want to be there tomorrow.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. And I'm going to send you the application. And yeah, I would love for you to come.
I'm going to apply. And I'm not even kidding. And I hope you accept me. What if you reject me after all of this? No, but be fair.
I feel like we just scratched the surface. Like, I know we've been talking and stuff, but I just feel so like warm and full, and like there's so many more conversations to be had.
I'm so glad that you feel that way. Yeah, you're gonna definitely have to come back and let us know how your new year plays out. This will come out, I believe, either the end of December or beginning of January. So you're going to have to come back and let us know how it's going. And I hope that we're the first of many places that give you a platform to talk about your work. Not the first of many. I mean, like, since this EP has come out, we're not the first ever, but I'm just saying, like, about Psychowave.
Yes. This will be coming out, I guess, after to your listeners after it's been out for about a month or anything. But let people know, because by then it'll probably be on Spotify too. So to your people, hey, you can listen to it on Spotify. If you want to support me, a Black, Brown, Indigenous, queer artist directly, please buy from Bandcamp, the superior platform.
Bandcamp is the superior platform. We'll have links in the footnotes to the EP on Bandcamp. Will have links to all your socials and everything. But for those of you that don't know, where can people find you on the internet if you want to be found? Give us the lowdown.
Generally, on my website for everything is kianaj.com, KianahJay.com. That's where you can find everything from my art to my music to my aerials to photos, really anything. You can write me on there. Merch, all that.
Nice. Oh, there's merch on there? I'm going to get some fucking merch.
By the time that this is uploaded, I think I'm putting out a Tulips yoga mat.
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about your name too. Damn it. Okay, last question before we wrap up. Tell us about the name Tulips and why you chose that as a artist name.
Back in the day, your girl used to do a little bit of graffiti. And in it, she liked to write Tulips because I liked how the letters looked. And I wanted everybody to be able to tell that it was a female writer, because most graffiti artists are males, you know, so I just like wanted to be a parent, but I wasn't really good at that. And I also just didn't have the cojones. I didn't really want to be out there in the middle of the night painting and tagging when you're supposed to. And one time I had a cop try to talk to me and I was like, ooh, I'm done. I'm not going to be doing this anymore.
And you're like, oh, I realize now why this is the majority male scene. It's because they don't feel unsafe out
exactly.
here.
Exactly. They don't just feel unsafe out here. So then when I moved to LA, and because that was back in, that was back in college or early. So I was like 19 doing that stuff. But yeah, moved here, started putting out music, and just decided that was the right name to use.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, I like it. I dig it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you guys for talking.
Thanks for joining us on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was a treat and first of many great conversations that I'm sure we'll have together.
Hope everyone's staying healthy and sane.
Yes. Please listen to the EP Psychowave, everybody. It is genuinely just so good, and I can't wait to hear more of your work, and I can't wait to follow you along on this journey.
Thank you, TWOLIPS. Two Lips is my music project, and my name is Kiana Jane.
Yay!
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Ethnically Amb, A-M-B on Twitter, and Ethnically Ambig, A-M-B-I-G on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosni on Twitter.
And until next time, listen to Psychowave.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.